Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. Those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say, it's nation time. You don't say that no more. Because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. We're happy to have you, our listeners, and we're excited to have our guest that is a special guest, Sister Yanazda. She is Sister Yanazda Lone Wolf. Separating into our own communities involves everything from building our infrastructures to securing our own communities, but we also have to have relationships with our friends in and around our communities where we are. And so that involves getting involved in the rights and human rights and having a knowledge of human rights and activities all around us. So tonight's show, we're going to have a sister that's well experienced in that area, and she's going to be interviewed by our one and only Dr. Rishdi Muhmin. So I'm going to bring on Dr. Rishdi right now. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Rishdi.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. Yes, sir. Is Sister Yanazda available?
She is.
Okay, let's put her on.
Okay. Sister Yanazda?
Yes, I'm on.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Yanazda.
Wa alaikum salam.
Should I give them the short resume or your long resume?
Oh, it's up to you. It's up to you.
Well, let me say this. For those who don't know Sister Yanazda Longworth, she has been out here fighting for the rights of Native Americans and also for the other half of her, which is the American Black. And she's half original Black, half original Native American. And you may have known about her from the last big fight you were in dealing with the pipeline going through the reservation, the native land in Dakota. And first of all, I'd like, you know, for you, Sister Yonaza, could you explain this strange relationship between the Native Americans and America in terms of land ownership and land control? You know, I don't think many people understand that, and it's kind of tricky, even for myself, that I've been working in that field, dealing with that. People need to know that it's kind of a strange relationship. Could you talk to us about that first? Because that gets right down into why it was such a fight to keep that pipeline from going through their sacred land.
Yeah, so, well, there is land that, so of course we know that, you know, Christopher Columbus didn't discover America. And then, you know, then if we look at history, but when he came, when Christopher Columbus came here, and then every so-called discoverer that came after him, they basically, they had a document signed by the Pope, which is, or the church, or whether it was the, you know, the queen or wherever they came from, whether it's England or Spain, or, but they had the Pope sign a document called the Doctrine of Discovery, which is the papal bull. A papal bull is now all indigenous lands all around the world, as a matter of fact, are all under this document. Basically coming in saying that, you know, we could come in and you, we are now, this doctrine is by our government and our church, which was the Pope, saying that this is our land, even though you live here, but we are the right, we are the owners of it. So whether it was Spain, England, France, who was the other people that came, yeah, I think it was, those are the main ones. But those were, so fast forward 2020. A lot of times, a lot of people always wonder, like, do these documents even, you know, do we have to worry about these things of the docs? So we know that after Christopher Columbus, and now then you have the 13 colonies, then you had establishment of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Boston Tea Party, all of these things happen, right, in order to show, like, okay, we're now independent of Europe. But really, that the Doctrine of Discovery supersedes all of that in regards to land. And we saw this with in the Supreme Court. It was the Oneida Nation that versus, I believe, yeah, it was Oneida, that versus the Supreme, was the Supreme Court versus the United States government when they was trying to fight for their fishing rights. And so what happened was is that they, the Supreme Court actually brought out the Doctrine of Discovery. Who was the judge, the woman judge? What was her name that they always doing a documentary on now? Oh, God. She's a woman judge that a lot of people look up to.
Bader Ginsburg.
The woman judge that a lot of people, she's on the Supreme Court, Supreme Court.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
So she brought out the Doctrine of Discovery, saying, well, according to the papal bulls and the Doctrine of Discovery, really, even the United States doesn't own the land. So that's the reason why, if you notice, that why is the Pope and the Church still, you know, still looked upon, you know, they still have an allegiance to the Church. We see that with Israel. We see that with Israel. We see that with the Church. So there's an allegiance is because of the fact of they, their document supersedes all documents. So they had to fight the Doctrine of Discovery, and so they brought that out. And that was a case in 2000, and as a matter of fact, 2014 was the Supreme Court fight of the Native American, the tribes that fought for their land and water rights. Now, when we was in Standing Rock, all of these treaties are supposed to also, so that's basically what the Doctrine of Discovery is as well, but treaties are supposed to supersede everything, and all of the treaties that were signed was basically, this is treaty land. So when So when they put us all on reservations, they put us on reservations, and then they mapped out a land that was signed for with our chiefs and the president or the head of state or whatever of that time, to basically state this is treaty land. And that treaty land is basically like, okay, we're not supposed to go on this land. But what happened was is that all of these cowboys, and this is my version of telling our history, so I'm not a historian, and I'm not, but this is like my version. I know a lot of people like this sounds so like, you know, I just want to make it just plain. So basically, a lot of these cowboys and all these folks that were settlers, they end up settling, occupying and sitting on space and saying, I'm going to sit on this land. And a lot of that land was treaty land. So, and then you have a certain area where it was reservation land, meaning that that's where the natives actually lived. But then treaty-wise, we also have this treaty land. So what we saw with the fight in Standing Rock was that pipeline was coming through our treaty land. Meaning that our ancestors signed a document stating that this land belongs to the Ocheche Shekoi, which is the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota people. And so we was fighting the U.S. government and the Army of Engineers and all of the banks of Wells Fargo, Chase, Bank of America, every major bank, and we was fighting them basically saying you cannot build this pipeline through our land. These are our legal right through treaty. So legally, they're not supposed to do anything on our land. But because the fight is such a huge fight legally, the Standing Rock tribe is still in court right now fighting. We also about to we're fighting the Keystone XL. The first thing of business that President Trump did when he got into office, he said, let's get these pipelines built. That was the first order of business that he did, and that was to get the Keystone XL. The Keystone XL is a pipeline that will go down the Mississippi River, which is affecting you, Dr. Ridgely, myself, everyone that gets water from the Mississippi River, which is mostly America. And then you have the Missouri River, which also is 200 rivers attached to the Missouri River. So both pipelines are not yet our oil is not going through the Dakota Access Pipeline. That pipeline is built, but oil's not going through it because the FDA has found out that they have found out that it's built badly,
EPA.
Basically. Yeah. And
EPA.
Then the Keystone
EPA.
Yep. Yep, EPA. Yep, sorry, EPA.
EPA.
They are.
Right.
Yep, they're. So they found the EPA found out that they have, you know, that is built badly. So then that. So they're still in court with that. Then now, the Cheyenne River is which is near my reservation in South Dakota. In North Dakota, they are now in a legal battle to make sure that the Keystone XL is not going to go through their treaty land and their reservation lands. So we have a long, long history of all of these documents that the United States have broken for financial gain. But the number one thing that I believe that all of us need to do research on, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan spoke about this during his tour during Justice or Else, as him and I was going over all of this, you know, but he knows about this as well, which is the doctrine of discovery, the papal
yes.
bulls. And if that papal bull if the Pope rescinds on that papal bull, then that means that we can begin our process of demolishing the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, every law that has been established, not just here on this land, but international. On all Aboriginal indigenous lands, we can begin to start create our own land of our own if we start and get that the doctrine of discovery rescinded, because what it would show and indicate is these people did not discover, and they had no they had no right to establish laws on a land that did not belong to them. So that is something that there is a delegation, a coalition of black leaderships, native leaderships, Latino leaderships that have been fighting and trying to get this pope to rescind on the doctrine of discovery.
Now, I want everybody to listen to what she just said and then remember what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said in terms of a conversation he had with the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And that is that the minister had a dream about a vision that he was, in fact, went to the Vatican, and that the Pope gave the minister a gift to give to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. This is all in this dream, and when Minister Farrakhan told the Honorable Elijah Muhammad about that, he said, "Well, you know." Basically, I'm paraphrasing. Well, you know, that's nice, but I'm going to kill him anyway. So now we can see that why this fight that we are fighting, the spiritual fight that we are fighting is so important, because it goes right down to the heart of who controls the planet Earth. And right now it's the Pope. Because the other countries, other white countries, other quote-unquote white Christian countries have based their rights over the indigenous people in the lands that they have called their own now. I'm talking about the whites. Is based upon the Pope, papal bull of the right of discovery that he claims that he got from Jesus Christ. He has he is the vicegerent to Jesus Christ, and he has the right to take everybody's land who has not bowed down to their version of Christianity. So this is some very, very interesting stuff, and why the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is not irrelevant. Obviously, why y'all keep fighting this fight about, you know, Christianity, Islam, the black man, the white man, who's here, who's the original man, who's the indigenous man? What it got to do with it? It has something to do with everything. Because in the end, what you must have to live on and from is land. Okay? In the end, what you have to live on and live from is land. Because everything that we need comes out of the land or the sea. But in terms of ownership, people can own land. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that we need hundreds of millions of acres of land so that we can feed ourselves. But we have given up on land, and now all they want is some gold or some bling bling or some stock that's going down in the market. And while we on that, Sister Yonaza, you mentioned to me on the phone what you're doing with the young people now, the millennials, that they are finally waking up to the importance of land and the importance of agriculture and the importance of doing farming wherever they can. So, you know, those are two things I want you to talk about. More about this whole political issue with the Pope and that, and what you all have to do, and also the fact that we got young people now who are actively moving onto the land, not only in the larger land, but also right in the cities. They're interested now in growing food for themselves.
Yeah, you know, it's beautiful to see that. So I started an organization called Hip Hop 4 Foundation. I have five organizations, and I had to put I have to put like all of the work that I do under each different umbrellas, even though it's the same type of work, but it's for different demographics of people, but it's the same type of work. So I have an organization called Hip Hop 4 Foundation. I started it the first thing I did was it started from an event. I organized 32 cities to do a fundraising event all on one day using social media called Hip Hop for Haiti. And everyone did a fundraising event, whether it was a concert or whatever they wanted to do, all on one day in January 30th, 2010. And then it was such a huge success that I did Hip Hop for Flint, which was over 52 cities nationally and internationally, to do 52 concerts or an event all on one day using social media. But, you know, so if you went on hiphopforflint.com, at the time you was, or use the hashtag, you was able to see, you know, people performing in New York, in California, in Atlanta, or even as, you know, in Canada, Costa Rica, all for the people of Flint. And we raised water filtration systems for the people of Flint that takes lead out. Reverse osmosis is the best water filtration system you could get. And so I tested it. I called every water company and said, if you think your filter is the best, send it to Flint. Let me see if it actually works. And the one that actually worked was a company right outside of Flint. It's a family-owned business and called Global Environmental, and they actually, their filter took the lead out. And so today there's over 200 homes that have these water filtration systems in their home. And then after that, I did Hip Hop for the People, which was 15 cities to do a fundraising event all on one day for the hurricane. It was for South Florida, Texas, and the Caribbean. And then after that, Hip Hop for the People, and doing these events since 2010, and just and getting people from all various cities, you know, to come together for a cause, I said, you know, I think it's important to turn this into an organization, and let's have chapters where we are not only learning about survival tactics, you know, survival kits, learning about, you know, environmental rights, what's in our water, what's in, but also to learn about agriculture. And so there is one of my really, really good friends, Malik. He's in Miami, and he's like my right hand on a lot of things that I do, but he's also a part of Hip Hop 4 Foundation. And he basically found a group of people that had a garden in Overtown, and he was like, man, you know, instead of us reinventing the wheel, let's learn and let's connect, and they're about coalition building as well. And so that's exactly what has happened. It's like, so basically there is a garden in Overtown, an urban garden. Overtown is a predominantly Black community. It's one of the oldest Black communities in, it's one of the most popular. The minister spoke there, as a matter of fact, in Overtown during the Justice of Ralph's tour. But it's a very impoverished community, but they leased out a parking lot, and a regular parking lot, and they just use grow bags, and they instead of digging up soil, they use grow bags, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And I was like, oh my God. So you could basically you can have a garden out of toilets. I mean, as long as you have something to put soil in, you could basically grow anything. And I was amazed at how they got all of these grow bags. And then what they do is, like, they make it really cool. They do it twice a week. They have music playing. They're doing self-defense trainings, yoga, martial arts, you know, how to cook with the food. They do cookouts, financial literacy, all of that. And then my other movement brother in St. Louis, Haru, he has the same thing in St. Louis, and he works a lot with those that from street organizations, you know, from different gangs and the youth, and coming together. And I'm seeing all right now, there's a wave of young people, this Joshua generation, that are going into natural way of living and also on agriculture. And they're incorporating the hip hop culture, the lifestyle. You have rappers like Stick from Dead Prez, David Banner, that's making songs about, you know, being vegan and how cool it is to be vegan. You know, there's a documentary on Netflix right now with Jermaine Dupri and Nas and so many other rappers that are talking about being vegan and how cool it is to eat, you know, straight from the earth. And so on May 15th and 16th, Minister Troy and the mosque in Detroit gifted Hip Hop 4 Foundation the land that they have in the back of their mosque, the old mosque, they gifted us that land to be able to turn it into an urban farm, and that's what we're going to do. So on May 15th and 16th, if you all, anyone listening in, if you are in the Detroit area, meet us in Detroit. You could go on hiphop4foundation.com for all the information, and even on Facebook. But meet us in Detroit, and we are going to start from scratch and create and build this farm right there in Detroit, in the heart of Detroit. And we need people to continue to maintain it once I leave, you know, and to be able
right.
to once we leave, but you know, to do make that a space of not just health but wellness and doing seminars and yoga and meditation and even turning the produce into some type of business. You know, we're going to build, we're going to grow elderberry. Elderberries are grown within the Midwest and also throughout the Dakotas. And my people have been using elderberries to turn into cough syrup for centuries. And and so, you know, when we're talking about right now in this coronavirus epidemic, you know, we have to get back into our indigenous way of wellness and building our immune system and going back into the earth. And so if we're able to start growing, you know, ginger roots and as a matter of fact, in the garden in Miami is growing things like that. But, you know, ginger, oranges, pineapples, you know, and even elderberries and sage and cedar, you know, all of these, the yucca root, you know, all these different things that we can be able to start using to build our immune system, you know, is something important and to do.
Now, you know, give us the name of that more slowly. I know you hip-hop people, y'all think fast, write fast, talk fast, speak fast.
I know.
Could you get to it slow enough so they can contact you? What's the name of the organization?
Hip-hop, the number 4 foundation, hiphop4foundation.com.
Hiphop4foundation.com.
Yes.
Okay.
And if anyone can't make it to Detroit but would still like to help to donate us, you know, we are raising funds and also supplies. If you want to ship some, you know, whether it's a rake or a shovel or whatever, if you want to ship it or donate it or Amazon it to us, you know, email us, let us know. And then we also have a donation button on hiphop4foundation.com as well.
Hiphop4foundation.com. Okay.
That's right.
So we got to make sure we get something to stick on the people's mind, give them a chance to write it down. May 15th and 16th in Detroit, make it as you can. But if you can't, donate or send supplies, get involved with this. Now, Brother Carlson, is there anybody out there who wants to call in? I mean, she is a wealth of information, past, present, and future. I'm sure that there's people out there who have some questions so that I don't, you know, tie it up. Because you know me, I can just keep asking her questions. but if there's other people out there, please. Yes.
Dear brothers and sisters, as you listen to the show, if you have a question or comment, if you can go ahead and press the 1 on your keypad so that we can recognize you in the queue and we will bring you into the conversation. And at this time, it's still early. No one has pressed the 1 yet. But do you want me to let you know when someone has a question?
Yeah, let me know. Because I got
I got
one more question I want to ask her, and it goes back to this relationship between the Interior Department and the Native Americans. When I went up to visit the Navajo, we were looking at doing some work with them, the Nation of Islam, but then we found that they didn't actually own the land as such, and that even if we, so they couldn't sell the land, they could lease it to us, but that lease had to be accepted by the Interior Department. So they couldn't lease it to us, like sort of 9-year lease. But it had to be authorized by the Interior Department. And at any time, the Interior Department, they could nullify the lease. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. So what that is that basically, so they took all of our, they took America, and then they put us on reservations, and then that land, the reservation land, was put into a trust. So we have trust land, and then we have treaty land. The trust is governed by the BIA and the Interior Department. It's governed by them, basically, so that anyone cannot sell their land. They can only lease it. And now this is a good and a bad thing. The reason why this is a good thing, how I see it, is because of the fact that we are, let's take this into the Black community. There is probably so many people, how many people do you know that grandma and grandpa or great-great-great-grandma and grandpa had land, and then all of a sudden a great-great-grandchild came along and sold that land. Now they have no land. So, you know, we until we can get to a place of maturity as a people and be responsible and really understand how important it is to have what our great-great-grandma and grandma sacrificed, then someone has to govern it. And I know that we speak in a way so many times of, you know, we need to just separate and govern ourselves, but we really have been governing ourselves and we're still dropping the ball. So with that being said, it has to happen like that because of the fact that, so because we wouldn't have, even the little bit of land that we have that's in trust, if it was being sold and all of that, and we wouldn't be having reservations and having our own government within a government, and all of that. I really believe that we will just be, you know, in regular. We'd just be a regular population. We wouldn't have our reservation land. So until we could really get to a place, there has been, and then because of drugs and alcoholism in certain reservations, not all, but in certain reservations, because of that, you know, I have seen where people have gifted their land for, you know, just to get high. And we saw, you know, and we see that, we saw that in the Black community too, especially around the crack epidemic. So it's very similar in regards to, I always say that the hood, the barrio, and the reservation is very similar in regards to who we, you know, what we have all been dealing with and fighting against. And so so you're absolutely right, brother, that when you did go to the Navajo Nation, and that was an amazing experience, and it would have been really, really great, and the love that we received from the Navajo people was amazing. But yes, it would have had to go through a process of being approved. And so they have a lot of reservations in the Navajo, and you saw it when you went to the Navajo Nation, is that they leased their land to, what was it, Frito-Lays for their corn.
What?
You know, they leased their land to big corporations for pennies on the dollar. Very, very cheap to lease land from many of these tribes. Even myself, I have land, but I have very small plots. I think one of the land is like an acre now, just because it also have been fractionized, which is like in small fractions, and that also happens with trust land as well. It starts to become fractions through tribal members and as people generations, you know. Come and go.
Well, you know, we you know, one of the other problems we had with that is, you know, is that to grow food up there, when they do a very good job, you got to have the irrigation, and you have to put in the irrigation system, and so that would require a lot of money, and so then if we couldn't, so we have to lease the land. And we couldn't use the land to borrow money if we wanted to put in the equipment. But then once you put the equipment in, if the government decides that they're going to renege on the lease, that you can't lease there anymore, then all that infrastructure that you put in stays with the land, and there's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a drawback. Is that if we would have put in the infrastructure for the irrigation, and then if the government later on decided that it didn't want to, the Nation of Islam to lease the land from the Navajo, then we would lose that investment and still not have any land to grow on.
Yep, and that's the reason why usually, you know, a lot of white folks get away with leasing land on Native reservations. Because of the government is approving it all. And then even like, you know, right now, I don't know if you ever been to Humboldt County. You ever heard of Humboldt County or been to Humboldt?
No.
Humboldt is in Arcata, California. It's like Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
It's the marijuana capital of the United States, but it's heaven on earth, and not just because of marijuana. In the hemp community, I'm not calling it heaven on earth because of that, but I'm calling it heaven on earth in regards to like the way that they have built their infrastructure, especially mm-hmm. for agriculture. And there's also also where all the dairy farms are from as well. Like it's, you know, California cheese, California, mm-hmm. like all of that comes from there. When I went there, uh-huh. and there's also a native tribe called the Hoopa Nation, the Hoopa tribe, and my cousin, she is half Hoopa and half Ogallala Lakota, but she lives there. When I first went there, I was so amazed in Arcata because it's very multicultural, multiracial. It's a very small town, and there was no major businesses at all. And I was, you know, like it was the only biggest business there was Subway. But everything there is from the people that live there. When I went to the grocery store, all of the food, vegetables, everything, bread, whatever it is, all was from the people of that community. And then what even amazed me the most was the fact that they have their own dollars. It's called Humboldt dollars. If you have, I think it's about 1,000 people. If 1,000 people... I have to research it, but I believe it is 1,000 people. If 1,000 people live within a vicinity in a certain radius and all agree to use the same commerce, you can have your own money. So they have their own currency called Humboldt dollars. And it was the first time. Mm-hmm.
Now hold it. See that now. I know how people think. Now we got to get right down to the grid. Now there's a couple of things you said in there that's required. Number one.
Yes.
You got to have 1,000 people. Number two, you have to live geographically close to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? You can't have 1,000 people over two states and say, we're going to have a currency. No.
Yep.
There's 1,000 people in the same geographical area, then you can develop your own currency and trade with your own currency. But it requires the people to live in the same geographical area.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah,
okay.
Brother,
I gotta make it plain because I know my people. Let's we can have
I was gonna ask the brother if he could Google it real quick on how to have your own currency. I believe it is. I want to make sure that it is. I think it is 1,000, or it's a very small amount of people, but you do have to live within a certain vicinity of each other, and everyone has to agree. You have to vote. Everyone has to agree that they would use that currency.
Right.
So
it's a beautiful idea.
Called,
it just shows you how you can govern, but you got to live close to one another to do so. Go ahead.
Yep. So I actually wrote an article in the Final Call about being in Humboldt because I was like, it's one thing for us to talk about, you know, having our own, then being separated from, you know, from mainstream America and all of that. It's one thing to talk about it, but it's another thing to actually physically go and see it. And I physically went and saw it, and I was just so amazed how diverse. Oh my goodness! I mean, it was people from that were Indian, from India, Native Americans, Jamaicans, white folks. Like it was all types of people living in this town. And everyone was happy. Maybe they were all happy because of the marijuana, but they were
That would help.
But, you know, But the and they're making money because all of the it's the medical all of the medical companies get their medical marijuana from Humboldt,
mm-hmm.
so they all
okay.
get it from there.
Okay.
And then on top of it, it's just a beautiful place. It's right off of the Pacific Ocean, and I mean, it was just so beautiful. So it's possible to be able to. But the thing is that now, so there has been so many people that wanted to start marijuana farms, whether they were they're non-white. My cousin, she married a white man that grew up on the reservation, and he actually got approved to have a farm, so she has a marijuana farm. And she was telling me that because all of his employees are non-white folks, whether they Latino or Native or whatever, they're always coming there and harassing him because of the fact that, you know, he is employing people of color. And so so with that, I think with it, and you being a black farmer, I think you understand this thing in regards to black and brown people that are owning in some type of agriculture project or land or anything, of how much of a hard time they give the people, you know. And so I think so with that, you know, with even with what you're to close out what you were saying about leasing the land to the Navajo Nation, you know, it would have been great, but I think that there would have been a hard time that we would have got if we did went ahead and moved on that. And because of the fact they already give anyone that is not white, they give them a hard time on anything. So whether it's the reservation or whether it's or in the South with all the black farmers, I think that, you know, they just give black and brown people a hard time anyway.
Well, you know, I went to hemp. They had a program
mm-hmm.
down here in Albany, Georgia, where you go study the hemp. You want to get into the hemp business. And when I heard that they said that you had to get your hemp tested 3 times each year, in other words, in the harvest year, you got to get it tested 3 times so that part of it that makes you high has to be below 0.5%. And if it's above 0.5%, you have to burn all your field down.
Wow.
Okay? Or go to jail. So,
wow.
I told them, when y'all get this thing fixed where it's no longer illegal, then
right.
I'll deal. But I am not playing that game. You'll come by here, take one plant, take it to somewhere off the farm, some laboratory, then come back and tell me that I got to burn all my plants down.
Right.
And pay the money.
And they do that a lot at Humboldt. I mean, they also have it where the THC, I mean, it's legal there. You know, marijuana is legal in California. But before it was legal in the whole state of California, it was legal in Humboldt. And, you know, for many years. And so, but there was times where they would come, you know, if they was mad or jealous or just angry or whatever, the government would come and start, you know, these forest fires. So a lot of the fires that you hear about in Northern California is really starting from those marijuana farms. And literally when you drive past the Redwoods, it's such a beautiful drive. If you ever get a chance, you know, fly into San Francisco, Oakland, and then just start driving up north up to Humboldt, and that drive is the most beautiful drive. But as you start driving, you see all the vineyards of the wine, you know, the grapes for the wine,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll start smelling. You actually could smell the marijuana. It's so strong.
Mm.
The whole place is dairy. You know, I mean, and there's a lot of cows and all that, but you don't even smell the cows and all. You smell more marijuana than the cows. But the community of the people there, I mean, you're getting fresh milk from the cows and goats, and you're getting goat, you're getting the cheese. You're getting that grocery store has everything of that community. And which was so beautiful to me. My cousin, she's allergic to everything, like everything. And so when we go to the restaurant, they knew exactly, they know her, they know exactly what not to give her. They're like, okay, you know, she's coming in, and they make sure. And that's how the type of community, and as a matter of fact, I mean, I would love to live there because that's how it really looks and feels like heaven on earth. But the only thing I don't like, the earthquakes are a problem for me. So, you know, that's the only reason why. But other than that, I mean, it's such a beautiful place because you actually know what it feels like to be able to be in a community where everyone is governing themselves, you know.
Right. And you all, you know, depend on one another. And, if black people really believed that they needed each other to survive, we would figure out a way to get along with each other.
Yep.
So when you are in a community of people that depend on each other to survive, they buy and sell and grow and feed and eat together, then, of course, you're going to get along because, you know, that's life and death. And once you decide to get along, then everything else goes well. It's only when somebody decides to try to play some game on somebody or to cheat somebody or to do wrong by somebody do you have a breaking of the peace. But if everybody is intent on not harming anybody, not cheating, not trying to get over on anybody, then that's peace. Okay? So it's not hard. It's just that what's hard is somebody trying to get something for nothing. Somebody trying to get something and not giving anything in return. Somebody who thinks that they are better and therefore they should get more than the rest, even though they don't put out any more than the rest. When you remove that type of mentality, then you can live in peace and harmony with one another. Except for the earthquakes, I would like to go and visit that myself to see what it's like. The next time, well, maybe I can go on the internet and see if there's some videos about what's going on out there. You know, yeah, because that sounds great.
Yeah.
Wow.
It really is. It really, really is. And I had to write about it in the final call just because of, you know, of the in the back of our final call of having a land of our own. I bumped into going and I ended up going and I was just so amazed, you know, of how it is. But there's a lot of little towns. The last time I went out there was last year.
Which final call was it in?
I don't remember. If you in the finalcallsearch.com,
yes.
If you put in Humboldt County, maybe my article will come up.
H-U-M-B-O-L-D-T.
And there's actually a university. B-O-L-D-T. Humboldt.
Okay. Humboldt.
I spoke at their university there last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a tree. There's a picture of me hugging a big, gigantic tree, and that's in Humboldt because they have big redwood. It's called the redwoods. If you ever drive through there, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying that some of those forest fires are actually started by people trying to burn down some people's marijuana field. Wow, that is so crazy.
Yeah.
So American.
It is. Yep, it is. It's really crazy. And then another place, I mean, we it's possible for us. We just have to, I saw it. I think that it can happen. You know, it's possible for us to be able to create a land and a space in a certain vicinity within our own. And really like exactly what you said. I mean, when I was in Standing Rock, that's exactly Phyllis Young. She's one of the elders and one of the leaders within the movement. And she told me before I went to Standing Rock, I said, how is it at camp? Like, how is it at Standing Rock? This is when we was all up there camping out. She said, we're building a new America here. And I was like, wow. So when I went, I mean, the first, I mean, it was beautiful to see, you know, the Standing Rock protests. It wasn't like how what we saw within police brutality where you're going in the streets protesting and coming back home. We actually was up there camping out and using our camp and our bodies as a place of you have to come through our camps in order to, you know, you're going to have to come through this land that we're camped. We're going to actually occupy this space. And what I learned is that indigenous people do that all the time is they camp out and they occupy space. And they're like, you're going to have to come through my dead body. I mean, you know, you have to come through my body, you know what I'm saying? And in order to take this land or to take this space. And when I was up there, I mean, all of the donations that were being sent up there, it was like everyone created some type of job or some whatever it is that you like to do. We saw that in Big Mountain, you know, in the 80s when the Honorable Minister was Farrakhan, you know, and my mother and Chief Ernie Longwalker, you know, when they was in Big Mountain, Arizona, to they actually camped out to occupy space on the Hopi and Navajo Nation of Big Mountain, Arizona. And it was the same, it was the first time I ever camped out for a protest, and the second was Standing Rock for me. But one thing was that they actually camped out, and it was like, you know, I remember seeing my mom saying to the brothers, you know, to the FOI, she was like, you know, they was like, you know, how do we go use the bathroom? And she was like, no, you're going to help me build this outhouse. We about to go get a shovel, you know, take off the suit, the bow tie, and let's build it, you know, and let's build it, you know, let's dig a hole and we're going to build an outhouse. And then, you know, let's set up camp. And that was something that, you know, my mother loved to do. She was always teaching. She was always teaching the brothers, you know, on how to camp. You know, I remember her doing that a lot. You know, she was always like, all right, you know, come on, you're going to get dirty. You're going to let me show you how to make fire, how to cook, how to go catch and hunt, you know. And those are the things. So in Standing Rock, I saw that again. I saw how whatever it was that you were into, you know, that you had people chopping wood, you had – everyone was doing something, and we didn't look at race. We didn't look at – we all knew that we was all there for a mission, and that mission was to protect the water. And so I was sharing water and praying next to people that were lighter than me, you know what I'm saying, that was, you know, from different countries, different races and everything, and we all stood – that it really was a new America because we had a mission and we had a purpose of why we was there. And when it was negative 20 degrees, we was all trying to keep each other warm, you know, in these yurts. And we started, they started sending yurts to us, you know, people was donating and buying yurts. And these yurts are like Mongolian homes. They're from Mongolia. And they survive through severe snowstorm. And you can actually transform a yurt into a home. They're very cheap. You get a yurt for as low as $3,000 to $5,000. And then depending on how extravagant you want it. But we was, and they're really great to have, as a matter of fact, you know, whether it's a container home or a yurt. But we was living in these yurts. And we was, you know, we had a stove in the middle and cooking everything, and it gets very warm in there, and we was in there with different, you know, with just different folks. Like anyone that we felt like that just came up there in a small little flimsy tent, we're like, no, come in our yurt, because you're not going to survive in negative 20, 30 degree weather, you know. We didn't know what their name was or whatever. We was just more so looking out for one another, and that was something that I learned a lot in regards to governing ourselves and what that looks like.
Well, again, it starts with an aim and a purpose, doesn't it?
Yep.
You know, I get in trouble with my wife all the time because I say that in terms of the Kwanzaa, the first thing is something, and I say it should be, you know, Nia should be first.
Yeah.
Okay. Nia is purpose, and when you have purpose, other things fall in line. But you can't have unity unless you have the same. You're not on the same page. If you don't have the same purpose, you don't have the same goals, you're not going to have unity. So
that's the key
is first, and then the rest will come after purpose. But anyway, that's my just my opinion on it.
You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found the article in the Final Call. It's called Towns Print Money to Help Local Merchants. And it talks about Humboldt, and it also talks about other counties across the nation that have their independent currencies.
So how would they find it? Give the title again.
It's in the Final Call website, finalcall.com. And the article is called Towns Print Money to Help Local Merchants. And this article is by Matthew Cardinal.
So I guess they didn't publish mine. Mine must have been only print. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did a search on your name. It's a bunch of articles. I didn't have time to go through all the pages that have your name in it. It's multiple pages with your name. I was like, oh, it should be over before I find that one. But on Humboldt, I just typed in the word Humboldt. And with Humboldt, this is the only one they got that was relevant to what you were talking about with Humboldt.
Yes.
But it's still in there somewhere. But you can go there and find it. But also you can just go and just look at many of your nonsense articles. Like she has a lot of articles. She does a call.
It's a lot.
She does a lot of work.
I dropped the ball. The minister gave me my own page right before Mother Tynetta and Brother Jabril's page. And I was writing in there for several years because that was my mother's section. My mother's section was right before Mother Tynetta and Brother Jabril, and that was her place. And so when he had me help him in 2005, that was my section for a long time, but I haven't done it. And I really need to get back to writing and in the Final Call newspaper. So everyone that's tuning in, you know, I apologize that you haven't read any new articles from me in 2 years. It's been 2 years since I've written in the Final Call. So I dropped the ball.
Well, Sister Yonaza, if people listen very carefully, they will listen to see how active you are. All right?
Yes, sir.
And if you're leading all these organizations, then to sit down and write an article, it is time consuming. And when you write an article, you got to make sure that everything is exactly right because somebody will call you up on it. Am I right or wrong?
You're absolutely right. Yes.
So
that's the reason why I always say I'm not a historian. I'm just going to share with you my experiences and what I saw and what I've been through, and you could go research it all on your own time and, you know, and fact check it and all that stuff, but I just tell you what I saw with my own eyes.
Yes.
Dr. Richard, we're down to the last 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, with that, Sister Yonaza, anything, go back to your May 15th and the 16th. Talk about that. But then anything else that you would like to share with us before you leave, please do at this time.
Yes. During this time right now, I know everyone is in fear and is scared and everything. Just, you know, continue to just go back to your indigenous roots, learn about the herbs, and begin to reread Fall of America. We all been warned of this time. This is the time for us to be able to really take heed to the time that we're in, that is everything that we have been preparing for is now going into action. I hope to see everyone May 15th and the 16th in Detroit, Michigan, hiphop4foundation.com. If you can't make it, please donate. Please donate and help us build this garden for the people of Detroit. HipHop4Foundation.com.
Well,
that was it.
I'd like to first thank my wife, Sister Ann, for suggesting that I contact you. She's on the line. And I'm just glad that you found time to come out. And I hope that people take advantage of what they just heard, because they just heard a whole lot. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Bring in.
will survive.